thanks for tuning in to Beats Research Radio, a podcast and YouTube channel dedicated to disseminating science and research to the community. My name is Nicole Chu, and I'll be your host on this week's episode. Joining us today is Ms. Chloe Yap, MD and PhD student at the Mater Research Institute, University of Queensland, and Fulbright Scholar visiting UCLA. Her research interests include psychiatric genomics and understanding the relationship between the mind and body, including the brain-gut microbiome axis. Thanks for joining us today, Chloe.
Thanks so much for having me today, Nicole.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you on our channel. So to start off our conversation, I'd like to start off by discussing your most recently published paper in the Cell Press Journal, which presented a new perspective on autism and the microbiome. So as the lead author, do you mind explaining some of the major findings from your paper?
For sure. So I guess to start with, there's been a lot of interest in how the trillions of bacteria in our gut, the so-called gut microbiome, contributes to brain development and autism. And autism is a neurodevelopmental condition that is characterized by social and communicative difficulties, as well as restricted and repetitive interest. So this interest in the gut microbiome and autism has led to a lot of so-called therapies, quote unquote, claiming to support kids on the autism spectrum by changing the microbiome. But the evidence for these are actually quite weak, and parents and families really need clarity on what works and what doesn't to best help their child to thrive. And so that's why we performed our own study, including around 250 kids in total from the Australian Autism Biobank and the Queensland Twin Adolescent Brain Project. And this was a bit of a unique study in that it was the largest one yet. We used the latest microbiome sequencing technology. And importantly, we also really carefully analyzed lots of other data. So clinical data, lifestyle, dietary, and genetic data. And that's important because it gives us a 3D view of what's going on. And in our study, we did not find that the microbiome seems to cause autism. And instead, it looks like characteristics of autism contribute to microbiome differences. And more specifically, it looks like autistic children prefer to eat a narrower selection of foods, and that this in turn affects the microbiome. So in other words, a case of mind over microbes.
Oh, I see. Thank you so much for sharing this in such a well-explained manner. And truly, like, the largest autism microbiome study to date is very, very impressive work. So you sort of mentioned like the gut microbiome at the start, but for those who may not know, do you mind explaining about it more in depth and why it's such a hot topic currently when studying health and certain diseases?
Absolutely. So the human microbiome refers to these trillions of microorganisms, be they bacteria or viruses or fungi or, you know, pretty much anything that live on us and within us. But actually generally the microbiome can actually refer to any community of microbes in any environment, like it can be, you know, in the soil and permafrost or whatever, but we'll just focus on the human microbiome here. And so we've got the gut, we've got the microbiome, and then we've got the gut microbiome. So the microbiome that exists specifically in the gut. The microbiome is a really tantalizing field of research because there's sort of this idea that we're constantly interacting with these trillions of microbes, and these interactions could, you know, feasibly affect our health and well-being. And it's only within the past decade or so that we've had the tools to look at this forgotten organ to some degree. And that's a really exciting prospect. But because the field is so young, the human microbiome isn't well understood overall. For example, we don't know yet what a normal microbiome actually looks like. So there are some conditions where there is good evidence that the microbiome is important. So one example of this is Clostridium difficile infections. And that's basically what happens when you, for example, you might have surgery or be in the hospital, you're taking a lot of antibiotics. The antibiotics kill a lot of the microbes in your gut, some of which are good, most of which actually are probably good, and we live, you know, in harmony with them. And because this is disrupted, then bad pathogenic bacteria settle in, like Clostridium difficile, and that causes gut problems. And so that's an intuitive link, and I think that makes a lot of sense, and there's good evidence behind that. And for example, some microbiome therapies, for example, fecal microbiota transfers, which is where you literally sort of kind of, it's what it sounds, you basically transplant someone's poo or their microbiome to replace yours. Those have good evidence of working in that case of Clostridium difficile. And so I guess that's one instance in where it works, but there are also other instances in which people propose it might work, or it's still kind of under active research, but the evidence isn't really there yet. And so one of these areas is this interest between the microbiome and its potential contribution to brain development and autism. And that sounds pretty extraordinary. I mean, it's quite different from an intuitive link from, you know, gut and antibiotics and, you know, gut problems. And I think in general, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, which we simply don't have yet in the case of autism and the microbiome. But in general, as I said, this is a young field and there is a lot more to explore and understand within it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. It's really cool to see how like these tiny microbiomes have like such a big impact on our overall function. So prior to your study, there was a growing hype that the gut microbiome drove autism, indicating like a causal link between the two factors. Why was this hypothesis an issue for members of the autism community?
So the idea that the microbiome, the gut microbiome might drive autism, I think the concern with that is that it's led to premature interest in the microbiome as potential therapy for autism. And so this idea led to early clinical trials, but more concerningly, the marketing of microbiome therapies to desperate families who really just want the best for their child and their child to flourish. And so these interventions include probiotics, bad diets, and even these fecal microbiota transfers that I mentioned earlier. And these come with significant costs. I mean, they're expensive. Families have to reorient their entire lives around some of these fad diets. And these fecal microbiota transfers can be harmful. For example, there are instances in which they can actually cause life-threatening infections. But if the microbiome is a downstream consequence of autistic traits, so consequence rather than cause, then these interventions are not only costly and risky, but they're also unlikely to work. And so our study is important in providing clarity to families that microbiome therapies should be viewed with caution. For example, it might be worth spending your money and focus your attention elsewhere. For example, on the importance of a healthy, balanced diet for kids on the autism spectrum and supporting and interventions, you know, from clinicians that support families at mealtimes. Mm-hmm. But I guess even more broadly than that, the issue of treating or curing autism is actually highly fraught within the community. Many autistic people, at least, you know, to my understanding, at least what I've been told, are perfectly happy just how they are. And they have their own strengths and abilities that non-autistic people lack, which are unfortunately under-recognized at current. And my understanding of the situation is that many in the community find the idea of therapies, like microbiome therapies, to be ableist and quite offensive. And so they're having concerns in the community about the very premise of, you know, microbiome therapies in general.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. And sort of changing the topic a bit more to your sort of data analysis methods. So you work through the lens of big data to analyze the links between like going from molecules all the way to our social mind. So what does big data entail? Do you mind explaining a bit?
That's a great question. And I guess maybe the framing for this is that humanity is now in the information revolution. Like we had the industrial and the agricultural revolution before, we're now in the information revolution. And so what that means is that we can now collect and store tons of data about really complex systems that can be human biology and health or our social networks. And, you know, storing and collecting data is one thing, but now we need to make sense of that data. And that, I guess, is where big data and analysis comes in. And so more specifically in the field of biology, technological advances have meant that we can now go from studying single genes and molecules at a time to studying anywhere from between hundreds to even millions at once. And that's just for one person. And so we're now getting bigger data sets. So, you know, each of these hundreds or millions of markers from thousands of people. And that's literally big data. And so with all that data, understanding the mechanisms or finding molecules of interest is like finding a needle in a haystack. So we then rely on statistical methods and big computers, computing power to help us on that search. And so that's, I guess, what I mean by big data.
Oh, yeah, I see. Definitely makes a lot more sense. So for your study, it was one of the largest in identifying like autism and the microbiome study to date. So why was big data important to use when studying like the microbiome?
So the microbiome is an example of big data, just the kind of the nature of the data set that we deal with the microbiome, because there are trillions of bacteria on us and we want to capture as many of those as possible. And each of those bacteria have, you know, thousands or hundreds or thousands of different genes as well. And we also want to understand what's going on with those genes. And we can find out, you know, what they are and what they do by sequencing all their genetic material. And then we need to use these analytical approaches to find out which microbial features are important and relevant. So again, that's a big data question. And I think another thing as well is that the more microbes that you have, the more people you essentially need to kind of tease out, you know, what's important or not. For example, if you're only looking at a couple of people and millions of data points, it's actually really hard to find trends within. And so we need to find more people as well. And I just also say that even though ours was the largest autism microbiome study to date, it's actually relatively moderately sized in the grand scheme. And the microbiome, you know, field as a whole is moving towards, you know, getting more and more and more people, you know, tens of thousands of people, maybe in the next 10 years or, you know, 5 years, hundreds of thousands of people. And that's really the scale of the data that we need, I think, to understand, to really appreciate and understand these interactions that we propose are occurring.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye out for future studies coming out in this field. So for my final question, based on like the results from your study, what are some of the next key takeaways or steps moving forward that we can help raise the standard of care for autism?
It's a great question. And I think one major issue in autism research and care in general is that, unfortunately, there is a lot of misinformation, pseudoscience, and poor quality science out there. And one reason for that, which may not exist so much for other conditions, is that we really don't know a lot about autism, which is incredibly challenging for people looking for answers. And what that might mean is that misinformation can sometimes fill that gap, which can lead to this marketing of these unproven treatments to desperate families, which, you know, is frankly unethical. So to cut through this misinformation, I think we need to build an evidence base with rigorous and reproducible science. And importantly, you know, the next step from that is then to communicate that evidence base to the community in a really clear way so that people can make informed choices. A second sort of, you know, these are quite general steps, but I think they're important. A second one is that research needs to be performed in partnership with the community to orient our efforts towards addressing what the community considers as important and useful. So for example, we need to focus on well-being and quality of life and helping people access the supports they need to help them flourish rather than focusing on these sort of fads, which, you know, probably don't do much good either. And finally, I guess this is sort of one for us all. I think autism just does exist within a social context. And as a society, we need to consider how we can be more inclusive and to appreciate and support the strengths that neurodiverse people, including autistic people, offer that many of us non-autistic people lack. So I think to anyone listening out there, I'd encourage you to, if you haven't already, to read a bit about neurodiversity and just think about what we can each do to promote diversity and inclusion within our own communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've brought up some excellent points, and thank you for playing like such a big role in this like monumental field. And definitely, I think your research work is already changing the landscape for many.
Oh, thank you. I'm just a small player in it all. There was a huge team involved in this project. You know, all the way from sample collection and study design through to analysis and sequencing and everything. I mean, I'm just one cog in the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so thank you, Chloe, for joining us today and for sharing your research work with us.
Thank you so much for your time, Nicole. Really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and thank you for all the Beats Research listeners for your time. And Beats Research Radio is supported by the University of Ottawa Heart Institute, Beats Research Laboratory, and the University of Ottawa. We hope to see you all next week.